Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The New Statesman.
Hello, I'm Anoushka Kellyan, Britain editor of The New Statesman and host of this podcast. And joining me in the studio, I have our political correspondent, Freddie Haywood. And down the line, we have Ben Walker, The New Statesman's senior data journalist. This is an episode we like to call You Ask Us. And we've been digging around in our virtual mailbag and have brought a couple of questions that you've sent in to discuss. I've got our first question from James, who asks, how would the results of a general election change if all British residents were allowed to vote, not just British citizens? In other words, what happens if we let immigrants without British passports vote? And actually, this is something the Labour Party did consider, didn't they, last year? They were working on proposals to get to extend voting rights to millions of long-term EU citizens and other non-UK nationals. I think Starmer said at the time that it feels wrong to exclude them if they live here and pay tax.
Yeah, there was quite a big backlash, though, so
there
let's
was.
Wait and see.
I don't think it's going to turn up in the manifesto.
It's not going to be a priority, I don't think, in
but
the first
term. You can see that they have had that instinct, because they've spoken about it a number of times, I think in 2020 as well. Ben, what difference would that make? I think James wants to know whether it would affect the results of an election.
Yeah, well, what difference would it make if you enfranchised all of the British immigrant population in this country with the right to vote? And sorry, not much, very little. here's the thing about people who move to countries and, you know, you get your citizenship, you get your passport and you get the right to vote. Most of them don't vote compared to naturalised long-term native British citizens. Turnout amongst minority ethnic communities has always been below that of whiter neighbourhoods. We saw it. Or we would have seen it in the Rochdale by-election if Rochdale went as expected. But we know in the case of Rochdale there was something quite special, a disproportionate turnout there. No, the truth of the matter is, by virtue of being an immigrant, by virtue of coming to this country, starting life in this country, you are sort of more focused on your survival, of getting by, of paying your taxes, and settling and looking beyond at the more civic pleasures just doesn't factor as much. So turnout, by and large, amongst first naturalized generation immigrants and others is often lower. And so if you gave them the vote, I don't think it would do much. Nevertheless, it would change this. So in Chester, in my ward, for instance, which is Chester City Centre, I have 11,000 electors. And of those, around about 2,000 of them are European citizens. Because in local elections, European citizens can vote in local elections, but in general elections, they can't. So I have an 11,000 person electorate, whereas in the general election, it would just be like 9,000. Okay, so that 2,000. And what I'm able to work out, they don't turn out by as much compared to compared to the more native Britons living here. In terms of who they vote for, well, first-generation immigrants or those who've just got their vote, historically, they often vote for the party that will guarantee their survival, that will guarantee their place in the country, and that has often been parties of the left. That's historically, of course, been the Labour Party. I suppose if you gave more, you know, European citizens the vote, they may be the ones bringing Brexit up the agenda, perhaps a little bit more than we otherwise would be, as we otherwise are. Brexit sits as an issue to around about, I don't know, between 5 and 10% of us, like a top voter motivating issue. I suppose if you added a few million European citizens, of which, 30 to 50% will turn out, that won't make much of a difference. But though I said my ward, my own seat, would only see, you know, 2,000 extra electors in a general election year, you go all the way down to London, you will see the electorate surge, just jumping by a sizable margin. So something to bear in mind, bit of a tangent here. But when we choose our constituencies, when we do our boundaries, we do it based on electors, people who have the right to vote. Okay, that's not the actual number of people living there. Mm. And that's a bit of a problem when you live in an immigrant heavy area, a European citizen heavy area, because you have your 70 to 80,000 electors, and then you have sometimes in some London seats around about 50 to 60 to 70,000 European and immigrant citizens. And the case workload for a lot of those MPs, a lot of overwhelmingly Labour MPs, is massive compared to the more, you know, 99% British citizen seats. Okay, and so to be honest with you, changing, you know, giving the people the right changes the equation completely, because it changes how we draw our boundaries. It means we look at a different electorate, and you'll see a hell of a lot more seats in London, a hell of a lot more seats in urban areas. And there is a debate to be had. Should you just give it to electors or should you give it to population? Because case workload is, you know, it transcends electors, it transcends population. But to answer the point in a breathless summary, will it change much? Not by much, because turnout is by and large low amongst immigrant communities. Will it shift it in favor of, you know, parties that are more pro-immigrant? Yeah, probably. By how much? A percentage point or two, if that. Because, like I say, the turnout amongst those types of people is quite low.
Ben, is there a big difference between European immigrants and non-European immigrants?
Oh, absolutely. I always love this anecdote because it always shocks a few very white people. Rewind yourselves back to 2013 to 15, when you had the rise of UKIP. And they were doing particularly well quite nationally. They were on, you know, mid-teens, doing a lot better than Reform are today, actually performing really well in by-elections, winning slews of council seats. And they were polling around about 8% or so in London. And, you know, that's pretty par for the course for a party on the radical right. And you look in the data tables, you look in the polling tables, and what will always shock me, and it was even proven when you actually went out on the street, was UKIP support amongst BME voters, black and minority ethnic voters, emphasis with the right to vote, was similar, 8% or so. It was quite surprising in London. And the long and short of it was this. Afro-Caribbean communities who had since moved to Britain, who'd since naturalized, got their citizenship, got their right to vote, they started to think beyond survival, like first-generation migrants mm-hmm. do. They started to think more about what kind of country they wanted to live in. And they came steeped with quite severely Christian values. And what 2013 to 15 was during the time when gay marriage was being pushed through Parliament and the Conservatives and Labour backed it, even though I think it was a minority of Conservative MPs, but we'll leave that by the by. The point of the matter was you had a lot of Afro-Caribbean voters with their socially conservative values actually thinking UKIP was the party for them. I'm talking by a lot. I'm talking around about, you know, a few percent, 5 to 8%, according to polls in London. Okay, that's quite something. But European citizens, yes, a bit more, I suppose, socially liberal, because, you know, when you are born in relative affluence, you tend to have more socially progressive views. But I have to emphasize, don't generalize all Europeans. Polish migrants to Britain tend to have a quite socially conservative outlook as well. And if you have Polish heavy wards in Northern England, you'll notice that more and more of them are voting in Conservative candidates in council elections.
It's really interesting. Thanks so much, Ben, for taking us through it so thoroughly. I suppose it's just a reminder. I think Labour were accused of wanting to gerrymander, but it's just a reminder that you can't assume, as we've spoken about before, what immigrant groups will be voting for. So after the break, it's Freddie's turn to ask a question. Freddie, can you give us a clue?
Yeah, we're going to be talking about Labour and immigration.
Nice and timely. If you're subscribed to The New Statesman, you can get all our episodes ad-free on the New Statesman app. You can get it on both iOS and Android. Just search for New Statesman on the App Store or Google Play Store. We'll be back after this.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, Freddie, so what have you got for us?
So this is a question from Ryan, who asks, will Labour be forced into a strict immigration policy come the general election in order to stop it being the dominant issue?
Okay. Well, this is a good question. I actually have asked them about this because they're not very clear on it.
No, never.
I think it was Darren Jones, who is Shadow Chief Secretary for the Treasury. He said at the end of the last year, the normal level of net migration is a couple of 100,000 a year, but it depends on the needs of the economy. And I think Labour were very quick after that to come out and say, we're not going to set any arbitrary targets for net migration. They don't want to put a number on it. And since then, I've noticed that that when Shadow Cabinet members are asked about this, they don't say that the 700,000 or whatever it reached is too high or too low. They try and keep away from the numbers.
Yeah, but I think they do say that immigration is too high at the moment.
Yes, but they don't say what they'd want to bring it down to. I think they're a bit more equivocal about it. And the truth is, they don't really have a plan for bringing it down, do they? They're kind of hoping that it will naturally come down without the Ukraine and Hong Kong refugee schemes, and once that build up post-pandemic of foreign students has worked its way through the system, and of course the impact of the visa changes that the Conservative government have brought in, they're hoping that will bring the figures down naturally and they can take the credit for it.
Yeah, I think that's right, but I think we should also note that that would only get them to around 200,000-300,000. We don't know precisely, but it's not going to get them down to, let's say, 100,000. You've got to remember that when the Conservatives came in 2010, they promised to get it down to the tens of thousands. That's completely been blown out of the water. Now we've got immigration, around 700,000. It changes, obviously, and as you say, we've got these foreign students who have come post pandemic. We've also got the Ukrainians and the Hong Kongers who have come, which slightly skew the figures. But I think the overall picture that immigration is extremely high is definitely right. I mean, Labour, I think there's some in the party who don't want to have this conversation, and they essentially have an extremely liberal perspective on immigration. The more the merrier. They think it's a positive. They think diversity is a positive. They think it's good for the economy. And then you've got some other, I think, you could put them on the sort of blue Labour side. You have some cultural concerns about immigration. And then you've also got the people who think that it suppresses wages as well. So there is a genuine split within the party, and that's part of the reason that we don't see a consistent, coherent policy on this. And also, I think they just think that the Conservatives have been so awful with immigration. They've annoyed the right, who are saying, well, why on earth are boats still coming and why is legal immigration so high? And they've annoyed the left, who are saying, why are you being so discompassionate in your language and why are you treating immigrants in this way? Overall, they've completely lost any semblance of competence on the issue. So Labour are very happy for the government just to receive all of this abuse and hatred and to sort of sit back.
Yeah, and something else to remember, I think, which I've heard, is that Rachel Reeves and figures like Jonathan Reynolds, the Shadow Business Secretary, they are having a lot of meetings with figures in business. You know, that's been a sort of consistent story for well over a year, that they're having these meetings. All of these representatives from the business world want to meet with them, and something that they always bring up is that they want to protect this workforce that they get from abroad. So they are sort of having that lobbying impact on their decision making as well. So I think that's another thing that's coming into the fact that they're trying to be a little bit careful about what they say about numbers.
Yeah, I think that's right. But we've got to remember that Keir Starmer, I know I always mention this, but I think it's important. Keir Starmer said at the CBI last year that this country has an immigration dependency and needs to wean itself off that. And I think there is some, not consensus, but there are some who think in the party that business needs to stop being so dependent on this cheap labour. But there's also concerns and tensions within Labour's economic policy and how it relates to immigration. For instance, take social care. Mm. We know that the social care sector is completely dependent on migrant labour at the moment because there are so few British people who want to do the jobs. And then at the same time, we've got Labour's policy to introduce collective bargaining within the social care sector. That essentially means that wages are going to rise. So economically, how on earth are they going to give the money to the local councils to pay those extra wages? And also, is that an anti-immigration policy? Is that how we should see it? Is that a way in which they can reduce the numbers by paying social care workers more? I think it probably is. Mm. But then the thing that we have to talk about is how you pay for that in the short term. Yeah. So if you cut immigration, it's the same with universities. Yeah. If you cut foreign students, universities will have less money to fund and subsidise native English students. So the government therefore has to fill the gap with some money. So in the short term, cutting immigration is going to be quite expensive.
Yeah. And Ben, I mean, is this split within Labour, which Freddie laid out, can you see that in the country? Because you do have sort of overwhelming dissatisfaction with the government on immigration, but for different reasons, don't you?
Overwhelmingly, the government is at rock bottom. on its perception of handling immigration, just as it's rock bottom on its perception of handling the economy and law and order and inflation and the cost of living and literally every other issue that is trashing their ability to, you know, project a brand of competence. I would make the point, though, that while the who leads on immigration, right now it's Labour, is overwhelmingly down to Tory fall and Labour rise. Labour is, you know, just, it's all relative. It's relative competence. Labour, you know, if you ask people, do you trust Labour to handle immigration? Most people wouldn't. Most people are pretty still quite cynical about that. The long and short of the immigration debate that we all need to remember, even in 2024, is that the debate, whilst, of course, we no longer have UKIP, whilst we don't have Nigel Farage in the same shape, he's more so in a TV studio than at a, you know, a public meeting. Mm. We still have a country that is, by and large, more sceptical towards immigration than in favour. We've shifted a little bit, okay? Overwhelmingly, most of us wants to see a reduction in the number. When you ask them what number they want, they don't have a clue. Most people can't really conceive these large numbers. 600,000 sounds pretty big. Tens of thousands sounds a bit more conceivable, a bit more agreeable. And I think Labour, you know, that they shouldn't come anywhere close to that debate, because the Tory attempt to cut down to the tens of thousands fell, you know, well, it failed, and UKIP and such like exploited it to great effect, which I think actually had a part to play in the Leave vote in 2016. Don't play with numbers here, partly because voters can't understand them, appreciate them, and they're just too big. So I think the question being, you know, should Labour, will they be boxed in to going hard on immigration because public opinion sort of demands it so? I guess. I think, though, just refer back to what they've done in the past. 2015, Labour's own manifesto on, you know, banning advertisements to overseas, you know, about ensuring that companies can't advertise to overseas. I think if they do that, that might be some kind of tough measure, I suppose. But I think the time to have the debate on immigration is coming, and it can be had when the economy is good. And I think you can make a positive argument then, because I think the nuance in the immigration debate is this. When you ask people, what kind of immigrant do you want? Do you want doctors? Do you want high-tech people? Do you want very experienced people? Do you want students? Overwhelmingly, Britons are in favour. When you talk about cheap labour, when you talk about insert negative descriptive, Britons are overwhelmingly against. But you can make the argument. You can make the argument, but you've just got to be specific. You've got to make it on an argument of, do we want more, you know, doctors? Yes, we should train our own. But do you want more? And most Britons would say, yes, you can definitely win the argument on that. But I think it's no one's making it yet, are they?
It's interesting. I was speaking to someone the other day and they made this point that, of course, at the moment, the cost of living in the economy is top of voters' priorities. But immigration is a bit like the weather. It's not as if you would say, this is what I'm, you know, focused on every single day. And yet you do talk about it every day. It's something that's constantly there. It's something that I think many people are aware of. And I think if we look at the numbers over the past 2 years, they've been so vast. You know, they're almost equal to the level of EU migration we had post-2004. And I think that was a big contributor to the Brexit vote. I don't think we should underestimate how harsh or strong the backlash will be in a few years' time. We've got to remember it takes a while for these things to work their way through the system, and we don't yet know what the political implications of that are going to be.
I have this theory that I don't know if it yet stands up to scrutiny, but I want people to start thinking about it, which is that people start to think about immigration when the good times are good. You know, when the economy's grown, when they can start, it's less, you know, the feeling about immigration is less about their own personal economic insecurity. It's actually about the desiring, the kind of country they want to have, the kind of country they want to have. For example, the economy was growing in 2013 to 16. Most people were starting to feel the benefits. Consumer incomes were going up. Disposable incomes were going up. And then we had the Leave vote. And immigration anxiety was rising as well. Okay, this was when the economy was good. This was when people were feeling pretty well. And per what Freddie says, I think when the economy recovers, or rather when people start to feel the economy recover, immigration will jump up as well, because people will start to have opinions again further afield. It's less about survival. It's presently about survival. It's about the economy, the cost of living, inflation, wages. But once it stops being about that, immigration will fill that vacuum. And the Labour government almost certainly needs to be prepared for that debate.
Thank you so much. And thanks to everyone who submitted questions. We do read them all, so please keep them coming in. If you'd like to send us one, you can go to newstatesman.com/youaskus. If you're listening on Spotify, just scroll down on the episode page and leave a reply. And YouTube viewers can drop a question in the comments. You've been listening to the New Statesman podcast with me, Anoush Shakelian, and my colleagues Freddie Hayward and Ben Walker. We'll be back on Monday with Alison McGovern, the Shadow Employment Minister, to discuss Labour's plans for Labour. This episode was produced by Catherine Hughes.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.